Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
Welcome to JGB episode 61. Maryland Eastern Shore at Coppin State. I put in my notes right at the start because we talked about this and we forgot to include it in episode 60. What did you notice about Coach in the game against George Washington?
He wore 13.
And what was unusual about that?
He wears 44.
Yeah, he does. And actually, when we went to see the game the last weekend, he was back to wearing 44. So I don't know. Is it away games he wears 13? Or did he forget his jersey? Or
I feel like he has a backup jersey.
He might.
But coaches do switch numbers.
I know what I forgot to look at was anyone on the roster has number 13. I did forget to look at that. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Unlucky 13s.
I don't know how we're going to find that.
I feel like they would leave that open.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, so we're at the situation where Coppin State's they're on a bit of a roll right now, playing Maryland Eastern Shore, and Maryland Eastern Shore are having a tough time of it. They have not won a single game this year. I think they've lost 30 games in a row going into this. This is the team that stopped Coppin State really from reaching the playoffs last year, because we went to see that at spring break. Anyway, how did game one go, JJ?
First inning.
This is Friday's game.
All right, first inning, 2-0 MES.
Great start. And then they put two more on in the top of the third as well. It's like, oh my god.
Four to three. MES. Fourth inning, 5-5. Sixth inning, 6-5, Coppin. Mm-hmm. Eighth inning, 6-6.
And that's where you can stop, because we've got this is definitely the beginning. It's like, oh my gosh, like this
what
is way too
inning?
This is way too close. Well, I think this is the important inning of the game. But yeah, way too close. I'm trying to remember. I think this was we were listening to this because you had practice. Yeah, that's now I remember. Yeah, Friday night you had practice, so I called up the game. I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me that it's really this close. Let's start with the top of the ninth, first of all. Maryland Eastern Shore walked. Then there was a fly out. That'll be the first out. Single to the pitcher. Single to the pitcher. I was thinking that was an out to begin with. It must have been like a bunt or something, or the pitcher just couldn't quite get to it.
Or he fielded it with his glove, and then it got stuck, because that's
unfortunate. I didn't say error on here or anything, but I'm not sure. There was another walk, pitching change, another walk, and they actually scored on the walk, so it was a bases loaded walk. Brown reached on a fielder's choice, no additional runs scored, and then McNew ended the inning with a fly out. And I think that was the inning just as you were starting to warm up, because I was told you, I was like, Coppin State are down by one. So anyway, bottom of the ninth, Coppin need one to tie, two to win. Black walked to open it up. Murciano doubled to left center. Di Vittorio flied out, but Black scored on that, so that tied the game. This was the surprising one. Kai Holm intentionally walked. Now, it's a tied game, so I know they're trying to get outs, but then Damon Gaither intentionally walked as well.
Bases loaded,
and Sam Nieves got the winning hit. Single to center field, RBI. Really strange that they would choose to do that. Like, I would have thought they would have tried to get... I understand if you try and get one out, but if you're walking people anyway, because you're losing a bit of pitching control, and then you got bases loaded, there is nobody to put anywhere. You could just walk in the last run without even trying. So, final score, 8-7, 13 hits apiece, one error from Maryland Eastern Shore. While I'm looking at the pitching stats, do you want to start looking through Coppin's figures? Cade Williams opened for Maryland Eastern Shore, 3.2 innings, 4 earned runs. Nico Felber, 7 innings, good start, good quality start there, 5 earned runs. John Neild, 1.12 earned runs, and Clay Thompson took the win. No hits on no runs. That was the bottom of that inning.
Hits are kind of spread out. Anthony had 2 hits. So did Damon. Sam, Chris, and Daniel had 1. Angel had 2. And Noah had 4 hits.
Noah, 4 for 5 with 2 runs. Yeah, that was definitely the star
Angel
player for Coppin on the game.
Angel had 2 RBIs.
Mm-hmm.
So did Damon and Sam. Well, no, they had 1. And Anthony had 2.
And for Maryland Eastern Shore, really it's the top half of the lineup that did the damage. Bronson Taylor, 2 for 4. Anders Brown, not so much, 1 for 5. Doyle McNew, 2 for 5. And Isaiah Beceris, 3 for 4. After that, there was only 4 combined hits from the next 5 players. So. All right, so they got the start they wanted. Attendance, exactly 100. Wow.
I feel like that's...
rounded.
Not correct.
Now, I do think attendance would be higher, because Maryland Eastern Shore is not very far away, So I'm sure some people would have got out of work early on a Friday to go see this.
I don't feel like it's exactly 100, though.
I don't think it's exactly 100 either. But
they just rounded, probably.
That's fine, I don't have a problem with that. Time, 3:01. High 50s and cloudy for the weather. And then we're on to Saturday, which is actually the game that we went to. Woo. So we actually went to Kinder Farm Park. We actually had Mason with us for this one as well. Kinder Farm Park. I played my best ever round of disc golf, I think, according to the UDisc scoring app anyway. I went 4 under, and we got to try some Maryland delicacies. Can you remember what we had?
It was a snow cone. With marshmallow.
It was. We've been there numerous times when it's been closed, and we've never been able to have one. And I've heard of how good marshmallow top it is. And I got one just for you and Mason initially, and I was like, I might as well just get one as well. And oh my gosh, it's really good.
It was root beer with marshmallows, what I got.
The marshmallow topping machine was kind of weird. It like crackled as you were...
Yeah, it was like popcorn.
Yeah, it was really strange. It didn't come out very quickly.
But it was good, though.
Mason noticed one thing that was really strange.
What?
So you could obviously put as much... and I saw this too, but I didn't know what the answer was. You could put as much marshmallow toppings on the top.
Yeah.
One of the pricing things was you could have a double marshmallow toppings. So I was like, huh? You
just
can put as much on
as
you... Exactly. So I don't know if that's like you eat it and then it's like, oh, come back and get us. I don't know. We couldn't figure that one out. So I don't know. I also saw you could put chocolate on top as well. I thought you might like that as well.
I want to make the most dessert one.
So chocolate and wine. But no, it was really, really good. It was a nice warm day. It was early spring. And we got to look around the animals, and there were some baby goats as well.
Oh, yeah. There's a few baby goats, and one of them kept jumping.
They were, yeah, they definitely have a reputation for jumping, and this guy certainly did. And it was like a little beam that they were standing on, because they liked to climb, except it was only 6 inches off the ground. One of them kept pushing the other one off. So they already got their habits formed early. And then there was a goat in the middle. You could actually go stroke. I didn't go stroke.
I did.
But... yeah, I don't know. And then we had to leave the barn because they were getting people. They were getting something. I don't know what they were doing. They were working on something. So
they
yeah.
were giving. They were trying to get them used to the mama goat.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
And you thought the horns were the eyes.
It was weird because it was dark though, so you couldn't see properly. And yeah, it was like an optical illusion. I've seen one of those before where it's like really confusing. Had a look at the chickens. Headed out to the game. I think we must have got lunch first. I'm assuming we stopped at Wendy's. Yeah, we did. We stopped at Wendy's. Got to the game probably about 10 minutes before the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because we wanted to try and see the anthem and the players introduced.
I got on the field.
Yeah, I looked around and you went to your normal spot, and then next thing I know, you're on the you're on the field. So all I saw was you're on the line. You're in the lineup for the national anthem, but. You said so. You were part of the tunnel, as it were, as the players were coming out.
Yeah, I just went there.
Okay.
Because I didn't know where else to go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no. If you got invited onto the field, I assume that was coach that invited you on, then, right?
Yeah.
Uh huh. And do you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about this game?
Well, I got a lot of baseballs in a few innings.
You did. There was one inning when you came back and your whole glove was full.
Yeah, there was a row of UMass fans in front of us when it was on the Coppin side.
Yeah, we were on the Coppin side. I didn't realize to begin with. There was actually quite a lot of fans for this game anyway, except it says on the attendance it was only 30.
I'm yeah,
like,
no.
There's no way. There was no way. There was way more than 30 people at that game. And if there was 100 the other day, so I don't know the accuracy of these things at all, but there was a lot of fans for this game.
Maybe it was switched.
I don't know. Well, they produce it on the day of, so if you go and look like for today's game, you can already see what it is. So I don't know. Somebody must have mistyped something. It wasn't 300. I know that. So it's not like they missed a zero off the end. But there was a good few people there. It was warm in the sun, but it wasn't that hot in the shade because we were in the shade. It says here sunny and pleasant. It was a little chilly from where we were.
Yeah.
Well, when you were sitting anyway.
Well, I wasn't.
Well, you were going to get balls most of the time, so... The one thing I do remember about this game is, considering it's 2 hours and 55, it absolutely flew by.
Yeah.
Because we normally try and walk around the stadium after, like, 3 innings, and then after 6 innings. And to me, it went really, really quick. I couldn't believe how quick the game had. All right, do you want to talk us through this a little bit, one? You're going to have to stop after the third inning for this one.
Third? All right, first inning, 1 Coppin, 1-0 Coppin. Second inning, 3-0 Coppin.
Mm-hmm.
Third inning, 3-2 Coppin.
And then UMass didn't add anything at this, so it's still pretty close, 3-2 right now. But going into the bottom of the fourth, this was the big inning for Coppin. Cologne hit by a pitch. Black walked. Murciano singled. Di Vittorio walked. Holm walked. Gaither doubled to center field. That was 3 RBIs. Actually, I missed some of the runs here. Some of the single by Murciano brought in a run. And the walk by Kai Holm actually brought in a run as well. And then, Gaither's 3 RBI hit. You had a 3 RBI hit this week as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, your game. It was, you could have possibly got to second, but you had to beat the play out. So
yeah,
you had to kind of
run.
Yeah,
he said to go through.
You had to do that. But then once it had gone past,
and then once I was already going to go through,
mm-hmm.
he said go to second.
Yeah.
But I couldn't because I was already through.
It's fine. It didn't make any difference because we have a run limit anyway.
Yeah,
so
it was 5.
3 people had already scored.
Yeah, I already got 5.
So there was no reason to do anything more than that.
Yeah.
Nieves hit by pitch. Nieves advanced on a wild pitch. Gaither advanced to third on a wild pitch and scored. So 9-2 now. Marte popped up to second base. Daniel Moore flied out, and then Angel Cologne flied out. So they'd actually put 6 runs up without even giving up an out at one point. Final score for the inning was 6 runs, only 2 hits. So you can tell there's a lot of walks going on there. So
mm-hmm.
that was kind of significant. So that left the score at 9-2. So do you want to take us into the rest of the game, JJ?
So it's 9-2. Fifth inning.
What is 11? 14-2.
All right,
14. And then 14-4 UMass after 7.
14-6 at the end.
Correct.
They got the same amount as UMass scored in the whole game in one inning.
They did, yeah. 15 hits for Coppin, 10 for UMass. No errors on this one. This was a fun game to go to. It was great to see the guys getting some hits strung together, putting up a big score, because they've had some tough losses. They're on a bit of a roll at this point, so it was great to see. Let me have a look at the pitching stats for us. Caden Straley, 6 innings, just 1
earned
run.
You forgot to read the stats for the whole game.
What do you mean, for the whole game?
15 to 10 hits.
Already did it.
What? Well, at least
Leah McCollum, 3 innings, just 1 hit and no earned runs. And I think we talked about Liam being one of the pitchers of the week last week as well. Uh-huh. So, only 3 bases on balls from Coppin. So that's kind of huge that they're putting that performance together. UMass had 7. Starting pitcher was Elliott, 4 innings. Just 1 earned run. So it's not like he did too bad, really. But kind of got away from him a little bit towards the end. All right, so there was a lot of hits. So stats from Coppin, any significant players? Without telling us everybody?
Kai had 3. Damon...
3 what?
3 hits.
Oh, okay.
Damon...
No, he didn't. He had 2.
Sam,
oh, sorry,
2
I'm
hits.
I'm looking on the wrong one. Whoops.
And Noah had 3.
I looked at the wrong one. I apologize. It was Alec Elgers who was the starting pitcher. 7 innings, 4 earned runs. And Paul was the one who took the loss. I got my games mixed up as I was scrolling there. My bad.
Noah had 3 hits.
Mm-hmm. Noah's had a good weekend.
Yeah.
I thought Noah had a chance to be one of the NEC players of the week. But unfortunately, he didn't. He didn't get recognized in the end.
Unluckily, Brett Griggs struck out in one event. It says that Liam had 1 at bat and then nothing, and then it's just 0.
Well, they were rotating players in. Once you're that far ahead, you want to give players a chance. So, yeah, they were rotating.
I don't know why he had 0s.
Because he came in as fielder.
He had 1 at bat with 0s.
Okay, so he might have walked.
Okay. But wouldn't that not count as an at bat?
From UMass, not really anything too significant except for Horner, who had 4 hits. The rest of the team only had 3 hits combined, so he had more than half of his team's hits.
What about the guy third to at the third spot in the top?
He had 2.
still more than everybody else except for the guy at the, except for Homer, okay. Warner.
It is. Didn't seem that significant to me. And a season high 9 strikeouts for Alec Elgus. I did look up. The most he previously had was 7 on March 24th. And then game 3. So go ahead. Tell us the first 4 innings, JJ.
I don't have the paper.
Oh. There you go.
Hey. All right.
12 o'clock start on a Sunday.
First inning.
Going for the sweep.
First inning. 1-0 UMass.
Not a great start, but okay.
Second inning, 1-1.
Mm-hmm. And that's so. And after 5 innings, it is 1-1. So it's pretty tight game, this one, actually. And the big inning will come then. So bottom of the 6th, DiVittorio walked. Kai Holmes singled to the shortstop. Advanced on a wild pitch. Damon Gaither walked. Sam Nieves threw the left side. Chris Marte walked. Daniel Moore struck out swinging. Cologne hit by a pitch. I think that happened in the previous game as well. Black singled to the pitcher. Merciano grounded out to the pitcher. We got a run in on that. And DiVittorio grounded out.
A bunch of stuff to the pitcher.
Yeah, I'm not seeing as many of that happen in these two games going on. 5 runs on 3 hits, no errors. And it took the game from 1-1 to 6-1. So dominant lead after 6. So tell us about 7th, 8th, and 9th then, JJ. 7th
inning, 7-1, Coppin.
Mm-hmm.
Final score, 8-6 hits. UMass had more.
They did. They also had an error, though, as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's how it goes. You string error. Certain hits together. This was the one I had already read out before, so I messed this one up. This was Caden Straley's, the one when he pitched. I was getting too mixed up. UMass players, 3 hits for McNew and 2 for Smith, and that's probably the most significant ones. What about Coppin? There wasn't really many total hits
Coppin,
anyway. Probably Kai and Daniel Moore, probably.
Daniel Moore and Kai had 2 hits.
Yeah, and that's about it. Unfortunately, Noah went 0-4. Otherwise, I think he would have been, like I said, the NEC Player of the Week. Because he had, what was he, 4-5 on Friday?
From top to bottom on at bats, it's 4-4-2-4-0-4-3-3-4.
Well, that's the interesting stat.
There's a lot of fours.
The interesting stat from Chris Marte is he had no official at bats, but mm-hmm. he had 2 runs. He had 4 walks. That's an incredible amount of walks. Every at-bat was in a walk. So you asked earlier, no, that doesn't count as an at-bat if you get a walk. It counts to your on-base percentage, but it does not count towards your average.
Yeah.
So it neither counts positively or negatively in terms of your batting average. But, yeah, no, being on base is important. Doesn't matter whether you get on base from a single or whether you get on base from a walk. So...
Well, the singles driving runs over
there. That can certainly happen. Yeah, if you're just walking, you're probably not advancing otherwise. Yeah. So, what about the standings then, JJ? We might have got this wrong originally. I thought it was top 6, because that's what it was last year. There was somebody who joined the NEC, and I think I heard there was going to be 8 teams this year in the playoffs.
The Moines?
So, it might be. Yeah, I think that's the Dolphins, isn't it? Yeah. So, how's it looking then at the top?
All right, Sacred Heart... 15-6.
Mm-hmm.
LIU and Wagner 15-6.
So it's a 3-way tie at the top for 15-6. Which, I'm going to say, we're not trying to get in 1-2-3, so we just want to make the playoffs at this point.
But Delaware State 13-8.
I didn't know Delaware State were having such a good season, I'll be honest.
All right, Merrimack and Coppin 11-10.
So at this point, it looked like Coppin State were kind of joint 5th, and I was like, well, that's good, because that means they're in like a playoff position.
Yeah.
But then when I was listening to the commentary of the game this weekend, I'm sure I heard it said they were 8 teams, so we might be okay to get a little bit lower. 7th is FDU, 10-10.
It's my job.
And 8th is Central Connecticut, who are 10-11. I'm just finishing off the last pot. If you want to do the... If you want to finish off the lower pot, well, you've done a terrible job all season then, because this is the first time you read them out.
Des Moines are 9-11.
Uh-huh.
Stonehill are 7-11.
Yep.
The shop. Norfolk State is 6-15.
Mm-hmm.
And Maryland Eastern Shore is 0-18.
Yeah, they've now lost 32 games in a row. Percentage.
They've
won 0% of their games. Mm-hmm. So then, but the percentage is overall. So it's not just NEC games. It's
overall 0-32.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough break. And I've just been busy this week, and I'm busy next week. We're doing our state exams right now, so it's just a busy time. And
Coppin's on a 3-win streak.
You got baseball games, and it would have been more for that, except for that midweek game. They won 6 out of their last 7 at this point. And Mason's got lacrosse, and there's a lot going on. So we've always been kind of a little bit behind. We always tried to get these out within a couple of days of when the games happened, but we haven't managed to do it. And I don't think we're going to manage it for the next one. So, JJ, we are skipping the Stonehill series. 7-11, we were really hoping they had a chance to get some wins. But I actually told you, Stonehill's had some surprising results this week. This year. Like, they took games off Wagner. I think he said they took games off Sacred Heart as well. They also got swept, I think it was, by LIU. But they've took some games off some of the leaders in this division. And Coppin got swept this weekend. So it was also, the final scores were, in a 3-game series, Sacred Heart, Stonehill, sorry, got 50 runs, and Coppin State had 18. So it was, if we tried to talk through those games, well, the first game in the series, I think, was it 24-3? Sounds like a football score. And I was like, if we try and talk through how many hits different people had in those games, we're not going to have the time to do that, so we're not even going to try and do it. So, unfortunately, now, although Coppin were in a good position, having just lost to Stonehill, Stonehill now is 10-11, and Coppin is 11-13. So, yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked at the other games, but we'll have to, perhaps, as we get in towards the final few weeks, we'll probably check a little bit closer.
It says that Coppin was on a 3-win streak.
Yeah, they beat
three. They went from 3 wins to 3 losses.
Well, they swept MES, and then they got swept by themselves. So, this week in baseball, I'm not going to do college. I think it's more important to talk about this news. This is from the Baltimore AP. I'm surprised you're punching the air in celebration for this. Highly touted prospect Jackson Holliday has been optioned to the minor leagues by the Baltimore Orioles with a disappointing thud. Holliday was promoted on April 10th, but he only managed 2 hits, both of them were singles, and had 2 walks in 36 plate appearances over 10 games. He struck out 18 times and was batting .059 with 1 RBI and a .111 on base percentage. The Orioles tried to rest him periodically, but Holliday, the top pick in the draft, never busted out of his funk at the plate. They sent him back to Norfolk on Friday before opening a 3-game series at home against the Oakland A's. Hold on a second. If you're trying to get somebody to get out of their funk, wouldn't you leave them in against the Oakland Athletics?
Yeah.
Like, if ever there was a team that you could finally get some confidence against, the Oakland A's, I would have thought would have been... I think they should have left him there for at least this weekend and then sent him back if he continued to be where he was. Do you want to have a look through any of those Orioles results? I kind of put couple of weeks' worth of Orioles results up. I'm not proposing you read all of them out, although the Orioles did do pretty well.
They had a 4-win streak, 1 loss, 3-win streak, 1 loss, 1 win, 1 loss. So they're at the top of the American League East.
They are at the top of the American League East. Yeah, I thought you would like that.
And they're beating the Red Sox.
Oh, I'm happy with where the Red Sox are. Don't get me wrong.
They're behind the Yankees.
It's still early, but I predicted the Red Sox to finish.
The Yankees are beating you.
I don't care. I predicted the Red Sox to finish bottom of this division. This week, as far as I'm concerned, they swept Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. 8-1, 4-2, and 6-1. And then against Cleveland, who actually have a really good team right now, they took 1 out of 3. One of them was an 8-0 win, though. And Chicago, they won 7-1 on Friday, but I believe I saw they'd lost on the Saturday. But no, one of the pitchers for Red Sox who's come through, apparently he's like, I think he said he was like 4-0 with like a 0.5. IVRA or something.
The biggest win by the Orioles was 11-3 against the Twins.
So yeah, now Red Sox are 14 and, well, this is 14-13 on here. It was 14-14 as of Saturday night. I'm quite happy with that, to be honest. There wasn't a lot to be. They didn't really make any major changes. They lost people, but they didn't really gain anybody. The only worrying thing is, although they're third in the division right now, the Blue Jays and Rays are only 1 game behind. So it's not like they're behind. The American League East is strong, as it always is. But yeah, we'll have to see. It's early. Sometimes you have early schedules that are just easy when you can sometimes get artificial results in there. So I know we've already played Oakland quite a few times. So we'll have to see. My understanding was Pittsburgh was supposed to be good this season, though. So I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes.
What about the Reds?
I don't know anything about the Reds except I keep seeing Ellie De La Cruz's name come
up.
That's
why I asked.
So he's having a few good games. One of his stat lines of the day was ridiculous.
I heard that a knob that he put on his bat was illegal, so he just took out the thing inside, put it back on, and he taunted the Nationals with it.
Okay, I didn't see that one. All right, name game time. Last week's answer was Carl Erskine. You didn't know who that was, but I said he just died recently. That was the reason why I included him. Standout pitcher in high school, attracting the attention of the Brooklyn Dodgers. After graduating, however, he joined the United States Navy in 1945, and he was stationed in Boston. Cool. While he was there, he worked with the Braves, who showed interest, but he stayed loyal to the Dodgers and signed for $3,500. After being discharged from the Navy, though, he was declared a free agent. The Dodgers had violated a major league rule, which says you're not allowed to sign players who are in the military. I didn't know that rule. But obviously, we're not in wartime, so right now, so I wouldn't know. After a bidding war, he re-signed with Brooklyn anyway for another $5,000. So he had two signing bonuses, so it kind of worked out for him. After his baseball career ended, he was involved with the Special Olympics and charities which aimed at helping people with developmental difficulties, such as his son Jimmy, who was born with Down syndrome. Erskine died in 2024, the last surviving members of the Boys of Summer Brooklyn teams of the 50s. I just re-listened to the audiobook of Boys of Summer probably about 2 months ago. So Carl Erskine to me, or Erskine, I'm not sure how you say it, was a significant player for me anyway. All right, I got one for you, JJ. No middle name as far as I can tell this week. A.H.
A.H.?
Mm-hmm. I got some clues.
Aaron Hernandez.
Nope. Was born in Cuba, and in May 1991, he earned his first call-up to the major leagues.
All right, 91, let's see.
Appeared in the World Series in 2002 and 2005, and also appeared in the All-Star Game in 1999, 2009, and 2017.
So, he played from 91 to 2017 so far.
That's a long time.
I know.
I didn't say he played, but I said he appeared.
If he's a coach, I'm mad.
He's not a coach. Wore number 5 while in the National League, but in 2000 took number 55, but regained his number 5 for the 2018 season. In 2006 and 2011, he was listed as the third worst baseball umpire in Sports Illustrated Player Pulse.
Angel Hernandez.
You didn't say Angel first. You said Aaron. I thought you were going to get it. I was worried you were going to get it straight away. A 2010 ESPN survey showed that 22% of Major League Baseball players identified Hernandez as the worst umpire in Major League.
He is.
It said that he had one of the highest rates for calls being overturned at first plate as well. Base. It was like 80% of calls that were at first base that the coaches asked to be reviewed were overturned. I was like, that's really high. But it actually said the league average was about 60. I was like, whoa. I know it's difficult when it's a bang-bang play, when the player's getting their foot there and the ball's going into the glove. And it is kind of difficult to tell sometimes. But anyway, so yeah, I picked.
Wait, what is that other umpire?
Oh, I don't know his name.
I forgot his name.
I don't know his name.
But he's really famous, though. Like an umpire.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. All right.
I don't know. He's involved in all the stories.
Well, so much so that you have no idea what he is called either. Yeah. All right. The one for the fans this week, if anyone wants to take place, you can guess afterwards if you like. S. Peralta S. Some of these clues are not particularly helpful, but they were just interesting. But I've got to start throwing in some clues to kind of mess people up already. Known to his family and friends as Mikey, after his grandma heard the name on a soap opera and liked it, start and ended his career with the Texas Rangers and has played for both Chicago baseball teams. And the last clue, I think, gives too much away. This player and Rafael Palmeiro became the first two 500 home run members to play together on the same team in 2005.
I already knew it when it was SS.
All right, play the outro music.
I knew it when it was SS.
All right, sounds like we got an easy one this week.